This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Jim Bynne.
Joy.
Julia Paul.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, so you've been running a motel and then you...
Bought a lifestyle plot over in Woodville. And then basically... I sort of got a few part-time jobs in the city, but then slowly gave up that.
So were you retiring, or you planned to
sort of semi-retire.
Do something off the lifestyle block?
Yeah, we did that.
What were you doing on the lifestyle block?
Well, we used to just rear calves.
Hmm. We had beefies.
Yeah.
We had 20 acres.
Yeah. So fairly low.
Yeah. So we'd rear baby calves. We'd always buy the sickest calf at every sale, and that enjoys
being... Well, because you could nurse it back to health, just sympathy, was it?
It was sympathy.
Stock agents knew that I would take them and look after them.
I can remember being at a sale in Dannevirke one day, and we were talking to this lady, and they were bidding down further, and the guy started off at $10. You could buy them for $10 or $20 in those days, not now. And he started off at $10. I still see this calf, $10, $8, and that. All of a sudden, got down to $1, and I put my hand up. And I walked down, and this auctioneer said, "Well, that's not even going to make it out the pen." He says, "You've wasted $1. And I looked at it, and I thought, "I think I have just wasted $1. I'm going to have to dig a bloody hole and bury it now." Anyway, we got him to survive, didn't we?
Well, you took them home, and you got them in glucose, and you gave them some antibiotics,
and when you
looked after them.
When you
the babies.
They
survived.
When you only had a few.
And we called him $1, and he ended up being a great big
Frisian bull.
So is it sort of something could be poor quality, but cared for properly, end up with good?
You didn't always win, but you did most times. Because you only had a few, you could pop around. If you had to count the time you put into it, you were actually going backwards. You were losing about $10 an hour, but you just did it for the sake of it. Yeah. And then that's how we got in with IHC Calf Scheme.
And St John.
Yeah, we did the calf scheme. Yeah, we started off with the calf scheme. And we did
the IHC calf scheme.
What they do there, Colin Mead started it about 35 odd years ago or something like that, where they approached the dairy, basically the dairy farmers, and they say, "You rear a calf, and then it's sold and the money goes straight to the IHC."
We would visit the farms with the paperwork and say, "Will you sign this and rear a calf?" We had nothing to do with the calf. We didn't know what the calf was. Yeah. The calf wasn't even born. We would just sign the farmers up to do rear a calf.
So they sort of donating one of their calves? Or you supply...
They'd rear one of their own. Some of them would rear more than one. Some of them would do it more than one.
I did my selling and would say to them, "Hey, listen, if you're going to do one, how about doing some more?" And some would do half a dozen or even 10.
If they've got large numbers themselves.
Yeah. Yes.
And are they identified? It's this calf or that?
You would give them...
An ear tag
that would have the IHC number.
Oh, okay.
And then once a year, usually the first week in December, I don't know whether they still do now, but the first week in December they'd have a special sale over here in Fielding.
And that's where the truckies went in and would pick up the IHC calves. We had nothing to do with that. We only signed them up.
Okay. Now, we used to organise the truckies.
Oh, well, yes, all right.
And they were good too, because they usually did it for free. Because it was a big job, because they were going around picking up one here and one there. So in actual fact, if they'd had to pay for the truckings, it wouldn't have been.
Yeah.
But we used to do from Wairarapa down
Waipukurau right up to
Waipukurau, north of Waipukurau.
Every dairy farm you would call on and say, will you sign up? And most of them did it. Most of them would do it. And so we would end up we'd get signed up about how many calves in a season.
Sometimes about, I think it used to get up to about 300 odd.
Yeah. So when you put that into money, because those were sold as weaners, and weaners were selling, say, at about $500 plus, that's a lot of money was made to the IHC.
Yes.
And so we did that. I actually loved that. Loved doing that. We found the farmers fantastic, absolutely. Until we, after a couple of years, especially farmers that were miles and miles and miles way out in the sticks, I could just ring up and say, hey, it's Joy here from IHC. Yep, we'll do it. So they, I would just sign their name, and that was all done, you know. So,
so you find that just generally people are happy to support these voluntary
types. I think people, well, certainly then the farmers were very generous, very very generous.
Yeah,
I mean, there's only once I think I was sent off.
It's only once. I'm sure there was more than that.
No, I think only once. I don't want you here, so you have to accept it. You just walk off.
Of course. Yeah.
Yes.
The only thing is, of course, other organisations have got on the bandwagon. And
yes, they did.
The fire service do it, and the schools do it.
Yeah, and the kindies.
So there's a
lot.
We lost a lot like that. Yeah, a lot of little community groups have done it now, which. Yeah. Fair enough, if they like to support their local school or the fire service or something like that. But yeah, over the years it was getting harder and harder because there was more and more of these others jumping on the bandwagon and that. Yeah. I think
and while we did that, we also drove for the St. John.
Okay.
So we would, for a part
two. You drove for St. John?
Yeah, the health shuttle
is what?
Picking up people who want a ride into the hospital, or it has to be for medical only.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, they're everywhere. The health shuttles are everywhere, run by St. John, and at night, you have to go for a medical and get all and go for training and stuff like that, and then the organizer would ring you at night and say, well, will you do tomorrow? And you would be given a list of the people that wanted to either come over to Palmerston from Paiatua to the hospital or to doctors or something like that. And so Jim and I did that from Woodville. We'd drive to Paiatua and pick up the van.
And they have a special... van.
Yeah.
You see, and what training... You said you need special training.
Yeah, a couple of days training, first aid.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, you're seeing them on the roads all the time. They're busy, busy. And then even when we moved over here, so we did that for years, when we moved over here, Jim would even still drive over to Paiatua and do about 3 or 4 runs over to the hospital from Paiatua and then end up coming home again. But that couldn't last forever. I mean, that was just massive.
Quite tiring.
So
it was good to get out of the house.
Well, you have to escape sometimes, don't you?
A bit of
peace and quiet. Now, you did mention, not when we were recording, but a reason why you'd be involved with IHC?
Because we had our own son, which got signed up, or basically went into a home for IHC people when he was 20. And in those days, we felt it was wonderful. It was a wonderful organisation, but it has certainly changed. So we actually, after 36 years of being under the IHC, he is now comes under another organisation.
Okay.
Which I mean, he lives by himself. He goes off to work, but he is just is helped, gets an evening meal, is taken shopping. Okay. One or two things
so,
like that.
So you said at age 20, so you cared for him until then? Or and What were the, the?
He got meningitis when he was three.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Which had what sort of effect?
Well, it's spinal meningitis affects the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So it, yeah. So basically, he was perfectly normal to Len. He did have a cleft palate. So when he was born, because I had rubella, so he copped a couple of things. It's an ongoing thing. I mean, we're always having to dot the I's and cross the T's for him. I mean, he does amazing, but... Yeah.
He's how old now?
61.
Okay, so he's done extremely well then to... You know, even the surviving to that stage, is that a
factor? Oh, he's extremely healthy. Extremely healthy, yes.
And very fit.
And very fit, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yes, I mean, he would do a massive amount of walking. And
But you said also he goes to work, so...
Yeah, he works at the warehouse, which he's done for, I think, 24 years, something like that. And... Mm-hmm. And he had work previous to that.
Oh, is at the warehouse in Palmerston North, is he?
Yes.
Ah, okay. He doesn't live in West End, does he? There's someone who walks past my house at a great rate of knots going into the warehouse and works.
There's actually... Yeah.
That would be David.
There's two special needs boys.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know where David lives, but if it was somebody going fast, it would be David.
Well, there's another story, you see. Because Joe was Samoan.
Okay.
So
Joe.
My son.
Okay.
Our son. And actually, Jim found that the other day. There's a photo there if you have a look.
Yeah.
And that would have been when we first got together. And I have to look at it because I think, look at the schoolboy I married. And that was my illegitimate child.
Uh-huh. So you adopted
yes, yes. Okay. I had him when I was 18.
Okay.
And schoolboy. I know, isn't he a schoolboy?
I want to get down to that weight again. That's what I want to find out. Where did
you don't actually look that different.
Hey.
Oh, he looks like a schoolboy.
I tell you what, when I got married I lost so much weight. Yeah, I think
that's the wrong way round. Normally they get married and they're put on weight.
No, well, he has now.
You weren't doing the scones then.
No, that's dead right. But yeah, I think I was.
So that's a different story again because my father got him deported.
Got
My father got my boyfriend, I suppose, at the time, deported.
Okay.
Because we were going to get married, and we even had to go to court to get it because I was underage. Okay.
Yes.
But my father fought really hard and got him deported back to Samoa.
So how do you feel about that?
Oh, well, that's life, isn't it?
Yeah, it happened, I suppose.
It happened, yes.
Are you in contact with him at all?
No, never. He actually is dead.
Yeah.
But
he never had contact with his son?
No, he never saw him. Never saw him. He never had any other children. But we have his brother. We always had contact with his brother, and only recently his brother's children who live in Palmerston here have made contact with Joe. A lovely fine family.
So Joe, he got meningitis when he was about three,
and that was actually a week after we were married. He has been one amazing father.
Yeah.
One amazing father.
So what were the effects of the meningitis?
Oh, well, brain damage. Damage, yeah. Yes. Mm. I mean, it's like the doctors keep saying, it was a tumour on the brain or epilepsy. He just wanted to keep... It's a terrible thing to see. You can't hold them. They just writhe the whole time. They're smashing their heads because of the extreme pressure on the brain.
Okay.
So that was all treated, and And I think we had to, if I remember rightly, Mum and Dad helped me there. Mum was wonderful. Mum and Dad were wonderful. And my father, who wouldn't have a thing to do with my so-called boyfriend because of who he was and what he was, when that baby arrived, couldn't do enough for him. It turned his life around. Mm. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. So...
Yeah.
Yes, life's
so,
funny, isn't
so
it?
He's had to struggle, but he's able to function quite well up to a point.
He can get his own meals and everything like that, and he does his washing and puts it on. And his providers, he has a wonderful woman who is his main provider, and she's incredible. She set him up with an iPad, and he does everything. He Skype. Well, his sister has always rung him every week from America. Carmen, she rings him every week without fail. She absolutely adores him.
Mm-hmm.
And but now she kept saying, I want to Skype Joe. I want to be able to Skype him. So Karina set him up with an iPad, so he emails her and Carmen Skypes him. But his recent thing, he's just turned 61, he wanted a smartphone. And I kept saying, no, you're not having one. But anyway, Karina said, look, I'll get him set up with one. So he's got that now. And he's doing everything on it.
Very good. So was he able to do a lot of schooling and so on?
Then, got no schooling.
So how did he learn all this?
He taught himself to read and write.
Uh-huh. Yeah. While he was young?
Yes.
Did you have a lot of support to help him through all that?
No, there was nothing in those days. There was what you called an IHC... workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So he got
picked. Oh, the sheltered workshop. Cook Street, yeah, wasn't
sort was it? Of like it that. Yeah. Yes, okay. And that's what he had in Nelson. And he got picked up in the taxi, but not allowed to go to school like they do today. See, Jim takes all these kids, and he said some of them, you wouldn't know it was anything the matter with them that are going to.
Oh, that's right, because you've got a van outside, haven't you? He takes. How old is Jim?
He's 3 months older than me.
He's 80. I'm 80. So you're both 80, but he's driving around picking up these kids and taking them to school. And, yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Tell him to keep on.
Well, you've got to keep active. Yeah, you keep going. They said this is why they said that's how the Japanese live to such an age. Because they're still active and involved and have responsibilities. Yeah.
So he does that in the morning and... I mean, I hear all about the kids. He gets very attached to the kids. And then again in the afternoon. So, but no, I mean, I think Joe's amazing. He gets the newspaper. He loves the newspaper to see what's going on in Palmerston. And he'll tell us, won't he? You know, he's going to such and such. He's seen that advertised or something like that. I mean, he wouldn't pick up a book and read it.
Yeah.
But then there's lots of adults who don't do that.
Yeah.
But he knows, certainly knows what's going on. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I only just had that phone, and he had to go to Wellington to go to the dentist, and we had an early morning appointment, so I said, come home for the night so we can just get away from here early. So he did. And he picked up the book that Dad's reading and got his phone out. He said, oh, yeah, there's a movie of that one.
Mm.
So, you know, just printed it in and, you know. So, and when we got Netflix and YouTube, he was telling me, no, you don't do that, Mum, you do this. And so he was, you know.
Good,
so that's good.
So you cared for him until he was about 20. Then IHC came in and they were able to give
support. And they were wonderful, weren't they? Mm. They were wonderful. And he sort of started off at, say, the workshop. And then somebody got... And then he started working for Hannah's, just out the back. And then the big breakthrough was there was a woman who worked for IHC who got some of these kids
Was this in Nelson or Palmerston?
No, here, in Palmerston. But the big breakthrough was when this this woman who got the kids work found this family business and got Joe working there. And they were incredible, weren't they? They had two or three special needs kids and they really got Joe working.
really?
Like going to work early in the morning and doing and even up to recently, I banged into her again, the woman, because it was husband and wife that owned it, and she said, "Oh," she said, "I see Joe here." She was at the warehouse buying. She was, she said, "I always go and say hello to Joe." So, we've had some wonderful things happen with Joe. And a couple of them have been recent. He was home. It must have been, was it during COVID or when we went to the zoo?
I don't know. What are you going to say?
Do you know when we took Joe to the zoo? He wanted to go to the zoo in Wellington and
he wants to go to every zoo in the world.
Yeah, which he has been to. He's been 8 times to America, twice to Mexico.
Yeah.
I mean, he saved his own money. He's done it himself.
Wow.
I mean, we
go with him.
But he's paid his own way. But we just arrived at the zoo. He wanted to go to the zoo because he does love his animals. So we're going there, and I could see this guy marching towards us, and he had a grin from ear to ear, and he just walked straight up to Joe and gave him a hug. He says, "My God," he said, "this is so amazing to see you, Joe." He said, "It's a long time," and he came up to us and he said, "You should be so proud of him." He said, "He is one amazing guy." And that was so lovely. I ended up giving this guy a hug. And then with this COVID thing, Joe was a bit confused about going to the gym because he goes to the gym every night. No, he said, "I can't go till it goes back to 1. I said, "Yes, you can." So I said, "I'll come with you." So I walked up to his gym, and another guy came out as I was going to walk in. And he stopped and he said, "Joe, what are you doing here? We have all missed you." And he gave him such a big hug and said, "For God's sake, yes, you can come back here." He said, we're all missing you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, that's so lovely. Yeah. He's a likeable sort of, isn't he? Mm. Joe likeable at times.
On a good day.
Yeah.
I think he's got that island personality.
Yeah.
I would say.
Which probably means what?
Laid back.
Yeah.
Let everybody else
worry about him.
Yeah.
You know, and he's never...
He's easygoing. He doesn't get angry.
Never had a behaviour problem. He'll dig his toes in, but never a behaviour problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So what were the biggest challenges you had bringing him up, do you think?
The biggest... I think... Oh, I don't know.
Did he learn things fairly easily, or?
Well, he's taught himself to read and write.
Yeah.
Because as somebody said the other day, well, didn't he go to school? I said, they didn't have schools in those days for them. So I said, schools for special needs children today is relatively new.
Mm.
Well, I can contradict that because the primary school I went to 70-odd years ago, we had 2 special needs students in it. Now,
so that's mainstreaming, isn't it?
They weren't officially there.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew about it in Wellington, but they were there every day because in our villages, that was how it was done. But in the cities, you wouldn't have done that. But that was, so officially they weren't taught. But so Joe never went to school.
You know, one of the biggest things would have been Carmen. She's always been incredible with him, and she often says to me, "Mum, there is nobody in the world I love more than my brother." She would do anything for him, but she would sit, and I mean, there was a big gap because we had another boy in between, and so she was the younger. So there would have been
six years
younger. She would sit at the end of this bed and she'd get, "Mum, get. Joe is going to learn to tie his shoelaces himself. He's going to make his own bed. And this is what I got every day. Go on. No, you get away." And she was strict with him. In fact, for years, Joe would say, wouldn't he? "Don't tell Carmen. Don't tell Carmen." But she was strict but so kind to him. And she probably put in a lot of work with him. So,
well, the making of the bed didn't work, did it?
No,
he still doesn't make his own bed.
Gets pulled up.
But she's in America now.
So. Yeah, she's a professor. Well, actually, she's the assistant dean of a big university.
Oh, wow.
She's done well. Brazil did it.
Yeah.
Brazil did it. Yep. Mm. And she always says that because she was just a very mediocre student.
Mm.
And when she come back from Brazil, she put her head down and her butt up through the seventh form and just got herself involved. Got very socialist. Oh, my word. She stood for as a young socialist at age 18 and then again at 21. She was right in
Boots and she's gone to America.
And she went to New York training as a young socialist for 18 months. And that's when she met her American husband. And so they came back out here, and then she was still involved. Oh, boy, nothing else. She was working in fish factories and abattoirs, and she was going to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck was, he is a smart cookie, a very smart cookie. And we don't know what happened, but I can sort of see him saying, look, don't waste your time. Go to university if you must. And she did. And though she did got her master's, and then she got a scholarship to do a PhD for 5 years over in the States. Mm-hmm. So that was all paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So they've stayed there. And then she got a professorship. And then when she was home in our first lockdown, that was March, she got notice. She knew it was coming up, but she got notice that she was assistant dean.
Mm-hmm.
So... so she works very, very hard. She does work very hard. And hers is basically third world development that she saw. Oh. Very involved in Uganda and done a lot of work in South America and things like that. Travels the world doing lectures and stuff.
Wow, oh, you must be very proud of both of them.
Well, you just do you your best. You said
there's three. There's another one.
Yeah, yeah. Simon's a chef in Perth.
Okay.
Yes. He isn't he? He's just very mediocre. He's
made his own way.
Yeah, not married, no grandkids.
He's worked in China and Singapore and all over Australia. Mm-hmm. He lives in Perth. Well, when he's at home, but he works in one of the mines now.
Ah, right.
Like he was like thousands of others lost his job in the first lockdown.
Mm.
And then he put his name down and with the mines. So
been busy ever since,
and he's working in a small one now. In fact, he sent it
working as a miner, as a chef.
As a chef, you don't get your hands dirty. My goodness, mate, you might get some vegetable stain on him. he sent a video where he is now. It's a small mine. Oh, I don't know where the hang it is. Somewhere out in the bloody Wop-Wops, and he sent a video through last night of them driving away from the mine, and they'd had heavy, and it's the floodwaters halfway up the wheels and the vehicles. They've had a lot of rain, but and a fortnight ago.
So what does it? It's never mined anything, but they're looking for what are they?
This one is looking for potash.
Okay.
They've been drilling there for, he said, 2 years, and they still haven't found anything. So obviously, there's a lot of money being put into it. But to start with, he used to be sent to different mines as a reliever. And then he put his name down to this one permanent. And he said there's only 20 people working there. In fact, over Christmas, it was only him and the electrician there.
Basically, he was the chef for the electrician.
He was the chef. Well, one day when we were talking to him, he'd been making beds. So he'd obviously decided to make beds. But he does 2 weeks on and a week off. Yeah. But as I said, by the time he gets home on the Monday and goes back the next Monday, he's only home for 5 days. Mm. So
it's 12 hours.
12
hours.
Well, in the big mines, they used to do 12-hour shifts. This one, we haven't asked him whether they do night shift there. Mm. The big mines, they do 24-hour days. So, I think he found that hard where doing the night
shift. Oh, yeah, cooking meals in the middle of the night.
Yeah, but
you've heard the Bain's history now, Julie.
But one of the mines that he was going to, there was 3,500. Bit boring. There,
everyone has an interesting life, don't they?
He worked in China for a while, in Singapore.
Yeah.
He was actually in Singapore when the SARS thing hit.
Oh, right.
That's how we got to Cambodia.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. They put all the expats out because there was no work there, just shut it down.
Okay.
So then he came back.
Because we were booked for China, and so we'd left home, and when the, the travel agent got hold of us and said, look, you can't go to China. So we said, we'll send us somewhere, and so we ended up in Cambodia.
So then he came back to Australia.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the Kiwi Fruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.